So today we're reading from two verses, text 52 and text 53 from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 9. So I'll read verse 52. The Buddhists could understand that Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a Vaishnav, and they returned home very unhappy. Later, however, they began to plot against the Lord. How sad it is to be unhappy to know that Lord Chaitanya is a Vaishnav. What a shame. Text 53. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Having made their plot, the Buddhists brought a plate of untouchable food before Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and called it Mahaprasadam. Purport. The word apavitra anna refers to food that is unacceptable for a Vaishnav. In other words, a Vaishnav cannot accept any food offered by an avaishnav in the name of Mahaprasadam. This should be a principle for all Vaishnavs. When asked, what is the behavior of a Vaishnav? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, a Vaishnav must avoid the company of an avaishnav, asat. The word asat refers to an avaishnava, that is, one who is not a Vaishnav. Asat sangha tyag e vaishnav achar. That's Madhya Lila 22:87. A Vaishnav must be very strict in this respect and should not at all cooperate with an avaishnava. If an avaishnava offers food in the name of Mahaprasadam, it should not be accepted. Such food cannot be prasadam because an avaishnava cannot offer anything to the Lord. Sometimes preachers in the Krishna consciousness movement have to accept food in a house where the householder is an avaishnava. However, if this food is offered to the deity, it can be taken. So that's very applicable, right? We have situations like that. You can offer to the deity food that has not been cooked by a Vaishnav if you're visiting their house. I'll continue with the purport. Even if an avaishnava cooks food without fault, he cannot offer it to Lord Vishnu, and it cannot be accepted as Mahaprasadam. According to Lord Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita 9:26, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakcha prayachate tadaham bhakchuparitam ashname prayatat manaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, I will accept it. Krishna can accept anything offered by his devotee with devotion. An avaishnava may be a vegetarian and a very clean cook, but because he cannot offer Vishnu the food he cooks, it cannot be accepted as Mahaprasadam. It is better that a Vaishnava abandon such food as untouchable. Apavitra anayika tolite bariya prabhu aginila mahaprasada boliya. Having made their plot, the Buddhists brought a plate of untouchable food before Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and called it Mahaprasadam. Om Magyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistang Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vande Hang Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalang Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupang Sagra Jata Sahagana Raghunathan Vitangs Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savuktam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Brinda Vinishvare Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I welcome everyone to Bhaktivedanta Manor, both personally and those online. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I will try and say something that's in line with Vaishnava philosophy. Request the blessings of all the devotees, especially from Yadubar Prabhu, our esteemed Prabhupada disciple here. Thank you. So, it's rather mischievous. What the Buddhists have done is very bad, right? If someone is practicing religion and then they have certain standards, it is very deceitful to purposefully make that person break their rules under false pretenses. This is what the Buddhists are doing. There's obviously some envy going on there. So they thought, let us offer this food to Mahaprabhu and we'll call it Mahaprasada. You know, so, you know, they say the British used to make the bullets. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but the British used to coat the bullets in, I'm not sure if it was pig flesh or beef or something, just to make the Hindus or the Muslims they would be not following. If anyone knows the accurate description of that, please let me know. I'm only speaking from my imperfect memory. But that kind of behavior is very destroying, because obviously religion means dharma. Dharma means that which sustains the essence. So our very essence, the thing that is most dear to us is our belief in Krishna or in Allah or whatever. And that's to undermine that through false pretenses, it's just a very bad thing to do. So what's described in the purport is description of avaishnav. The word avaishnava, you know, if you want to negate a word in Sanskrit, you just put the letter A before it, so it was quite hard to read. An avaishnava. So avaishnava means one who's not a Vaishnav. And the purport explains, asat sangha tyage vaishnavachar, that we should not associate with Vaishnavs. Now, of course, we understand that we can also give our association to non-Vaishnavs. For example, Sankirtan in general, which means, broadly speaking, what does Sankirtan mean? Kali Yuge Yugadharma Namara Pachar. It means to spread the holy name. It's a combined effort. Spreading the holy name means not just chanting the holy names on the streets in festival programs. I was at a wonderful festival program on Thursday in Northampton. Spreading the holy name, it means also book distribution, and also means cooking so that the book distributors and these Harinam Sankirtan devotees can go on Sankirtan. That's also Sankirtan because it's service to Sankirtan. In fact, everything that's service to Sankirtan is also Sankirtan. You know, we have our head pujari here, Nantagopal Prabhu. So he serves Sankirtan mostly through arranging that there's gorgeous deity worship. And how is that Sankirtan? Because anyone who comes to the temple will appreciate the beautiful form of the Lord. They will make spiritual advancement, they will be attracted, and they'll be inclined, if they don't already, to chant Hare Krishna. You see? So as a society, we're all very united under the mission of Lord Chaitanya, which is known as the Sankirtan Yajna. Yajna means sacrifice. Sacrifice means we're all trying very hard, and we just have to somehow or other do our best and pray for the mercy of the Lord, pray for the mercy of the Vaishnavas, that we can make spiritual advancement. Now it's said, apavitra pavitrava sarvavastam gatopi sa yasmarit pundarik aksham sabayabhyantara suchihi, that if one simply remembers the beautiful form of the Lord, pundarik aksha, beautiful lotus eyes, then one is both internally and externally considered pure. So this is the most important principle, that we cannot be contaminated by circumstances. And Prabhupada gave a lovely example. Well, his instruction was to one of his disciples, Harikesh Prabhu, go to Russia, spread Krishna consciousness. And he said, there's no vegetarian food there. You know, I'd have to eat meat. And Prabhupada said to him, I can't remember exactly the words. He said, damn your consciousness. Hari Krishna Prabhu was like, what about my consciousness? He's like, damn your consciousness. Just preach, you know. So he was given the instruction that even if required, you can eat meat as long as it's for your preaching. That's how purifying the Sankirtan Yajna is, you see. So we can never be impure through external means. That's why it said, ahoy tukya pratiyata. Devotional service is uninterrupted, meaning no one can stop it. No one can stop your devotional service. No one can stop my devotional service. It's uninterrupted. So even if externally circumstances are impure, if we are constantly engaged in service of the Lord, then we are pure because our consciousness is pure, you see. But it's also said, Vishayera anna koila dushtamana hoy, that if you take food cooked by a Vishaya, Vishaya means a sense enjoyer, then dushtamana hoy means your mind becomes impure. See? So we're very careful about what we eat. Why? Because we can get karmic reaction from the food. You know, if any food that's cooked, you know, obviously if you eat meat, you're going to get a karmic reaction for that. But any other, even if you eat even if you eat vegetarian food, there will be a karmic reaction, because even vegetables, they're living as well. And you also pick up the consciousness of the cook, you see. So we have to be very careful. That's why it said, dushna manahoy, the mind becomes impure. So I don't want to give it away, but I think most of you know what happens. By the divine arrangement, a bird comes and picks up the plate, and the plate drops on the head of the chief Buddhist, and he falls unconscious. And then to revive him, they chant Hare Krishna in his ear, and he becomes, his consciousness is revived. So it's a very amusing pastime of how the Buddhist got an instant reaction for this mischievous behavior. So I thought I would consider discussing in the class about how we remain pure. You see, let's remember the bhajan of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll call it a bhajan, but it's actually the prasad prayer. We can say it together, or some of it. Sarirara bija jal jatendriya tahikal jubepale vasaya shagare taramaji jiva ate loba moisa durmati. We'll stop there, thank you. That's what I wanted to speak about. So loba moi means very, very greedy. The tongue is very voracious. There's a verse in the 11th canto. Tavaj jatendriya nasyad vijitanyendriya puman najayed rasanam yavaj jitam sarvam jate rase. If one has controlled all the senses but has not controlled the tongue, one is not considered to be sense-controlled. On the other hand, if one has controlled the tongue, then one is considered to have controlled all the senses. So jitam sarvam jate rase. Rasa means the tongue. So jate rase means when the tongue is controlled, and jitam sarvam means we have, jitta means what? Conquered, right? Everything is conquered. So if we simply control our tongue, then all the senses are conquered. I'm still working on that. My tongue is very voracious. And one devotee I remember several years ago said, the tongue has got no bone in it. There's no bone, therefore it moves this way and that way. It's very flexible. Therefore, when you speak, you don't know what's going to come out if you're not careful. And I know this from my own bitter experience. So we mentioned that becoming impure through consumption of impure food, that's one way that we become impure. But we also become impure from speaking the wrong thing. You know, if you speak bad words, you can be implicated in sin. And worse than that, you can commit aparad. Aparad is more severe than sin, because sin does not stop one's devotional life, but aparad, it freezes it, so to speak. One's spiritual advancement is stopped if one commits Vaishnava aparad. And one can become covered over and even more critical, because sometimes criticism of the Vaishnava is one of the most serious aparads. Now, Ramachandra Puri is said that he criticized the Vaishnavas. And what was his reaction? He became even more a fault finder. That's what happens. One of the results of criticism is that you become even more critical. So we have to be careful we don't go down that path, you know. So that's becoming impure through what we speak, what goes out the mouth, and impure from what enters the mouth, you see. I remember once I used to distribute books in New Zealand, and I used to meet these Christians, and I used to say to them, you know, you should be vegetarian. And they quoted from the Bible, they said, it is not what goes into your mouth, it is what comes out of your mouth that makes you impure. Words to that effect. And my understanding of that. I agree with that statement, and I give the example of Hare Kesh Prabhu. So if he had gone to Russia and eaten meat and preached, he would not have become impure, because it's not the meat eating that makes him impure. It's his lack of speech, you see, because that's a circumstance that is beyond his control. That's my understanding of it anyway. So that's how we become impure, through the tongue. Going back to the Mahaprasadam prayers, it is said, it's a wonderful description of the body. This body is what? A lump of ignorance. And the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Okay. So what's meant by this is the senses keep us in this material world. This material world is known as samsara, the repetition of birth and death. And if we're attached to the senses, then because we desire it, we will go to that place. Karmana divinetrina. It's said that it is through divine prominent, divine, what's the word? Providence, that we attain material bodies. Divinetrina means literally divine eyes. And karmana. Karmana divinetrina. Karmana means by our activities. So our activities, they sow seeds of desire in our hearts, and those seeds of desire draw us to particular incarnations where we can perpetuate our love affair with the material energy through the senses, you see. So the senses, what's the phrase? Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Pratkata Dharma Dungstrayani. Kare Chandra Prabhu. Prabhu, remember that verse? Dungstrayati. Sarpakala, you know, the senses are broken fangs. You remember the verse? Anyone remember the verse? Hare Krishna. Durdan Tendriya, Kala Sarpa Patalai. Shishirada Gokulananda Ki Jai. Yes, Durdan Tendriya, Kala Sarpa Patalai, Pratkata Dungstrayati. That the senses are like the broken fangs of a serpent. You see, if you receive the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, that's how we control the senses. And there's a beautiful verse from Rupa Goswami where he says, Cheta Prangana Sangani Vijayate Sarvendriyanam Kritim. That all the senses become inert when we take the holy name into our hearts. When we take the holy name into our hearts, the senses are, their power of the senses are destroyed, and we can actually become Goswami. Goswami means controller of the senses. No jane janitar kiyad biyaramitar krishneti varna dvayi. Who can say, who knows how much nectar there is in the two syllables, Krishna. That's what Rupa Goswami says. Because when we conquer the senses, we will become able to relish the nectar of the holy name, and then we'll be controlled, you see. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it said, Sanyasyastu mahabaho dukamaptu mayogataha yoga yuktu manir brahma na chirena digachate. That if we do sannyas without yoga, and yoga means Krishna consciousness, that is very, very difficult. But if one engages in yoga, in other words, if one engages in bhakti yoga, then one quickly obtains the absolute in a short space of time, right? And yam sannyasam iti prahur yogam tam vidi pandava nahya sannyas ta sankalpa yogi bhavatini kaschana. What is known as sannyas is the same as yoga, or linking with the supreme, because one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So we're bhakti yogis, okay? We're yogis, we do bhakti yoga. We can never become a practitioner, proper practitioner, or elevated practitioner of bhakti yoga unless we renounce the desire for sense gratification. So the Bhagavad Gita is saying two things. Without sense gratification, you cannot be successful in yoga. And without the practice of yoga, your attempts at sense control will be very, very difficult, you see. So we mentioned the tongue, how the tongue can capture us. How are we captured by the tongue? Through incorrect eating, through bad speech. Another example of how we can be captured by the tongue, inappropriate talk for, say, male-female attachment. There may be man and woman, they get together and they talk and they start talking intimately and it becomes inappropriate. That kind of talk also causes a covering of the heart and one becomes bound by that interaction. Na tatasya bhaved klesho bandas chanya prasangataha yashit sangam yatapungsho yata tatsangi sangataham. Both Uddhava and I think it's Kapiladev say the same thing. They say there is no greater attachment in this material world than the attachment between the men and the women, or it's mentioned as Yoshit Sangha, attachment to women, and Tatsangi Sangadaha, attachment to those who are women hunters. If we engage in that whole atmosphere of sexuality, that is ultimately the greatest cause of bondage in this material world. Niskinshanasya Bhagavan Bhajanon Mukasya Param Param Jigamashu Bhava Sagarasya Sandarshanam Vishayanam Matayoshitangscha Hanta Hanta Vishabhakshanatu Pyasadhu. If one is eager to cross over this material ocean, then darshan, or seeing a woman or a vishaya, a sense enjoyer, is worse than drinking poison. So that's how serious we must be about our devotional life, that we can make such restrictions. Mahaprabhu would not allow a woman close to him. He was given the ideal example of sannyas. And what's interesting about this verse, if you think about it, it's actually not referring specifically to sannyasis, it's referring in general. So we shouldn't think to ourselves, if we do, that we may think, the sannyasis have their standard, and I'm a householder, I have a different standard, therefore I'll go back to Godhead and I can remain attached to all these material things because, after all, I'm not a sannyasi, therefore I don't have to follow these injunctions. Well, it's true you don't have to follow the injunctions, but at some point in our devotional life, we have to come to the platform of giving up that attachment completely. And we have to do it somehow or other. So we shouldn't think that, oh, because I am not a sannyasi, that means I can remain attached. We shouldn't think that way, because the verse is saying, if you want to get out of this material world, you have to give up all attachments, because attachments are ultimately what brings us back, you see. So we've discussed the tongue. Let's talk about the other senses, the skin. Well, we mentioned sex life. The skin is also capturing us through sex life. The touch of skin between the man and the woman, that's very attractive. We can also become impure just by touching impure things. You know, if we touch, you know, stool, we have to wash, have a shower. So we become impure through the skin that way. And how do we become pure? How do we become pure? How do we engage the skin in becoming pure? And how is that to do with the skin? Yeah, it is to do with the skin. If we do it on japa, then we're holding tulsi. Oh, we can wash with the soap. We can chant japa. We're touching tulsi. We get purified from that, right? Sparshenga sangha, was it? Tadbritcha gatra sparshenga sangamam. It's Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayor. Ambarish Maharaj says, if you engage your body in touching the devotees of the Lord, right, that is bhakti yoga, you'll become purified. So even the touch of the sadhu is purifying. Yes. Yes, very good example. If we touch the dust of the devotees, we become pure that way. And so that's how the skin becomes pure. The eyes, how do we become impure through the eyes? I mentioned the form of the woman, right? The form of the woman is another way that we can increase lust. So we become impure by looking at inappropriate things. You know, we have this problem in the society now of internet as spread pornography. That's a big issue. We have these wonderful villages in India. They used to a beautiful way of life. They used to recite Ramayana, Mahabharata. And what's happening now? The internet's coming in and people are watching pornography, etc. The whole culture, the Vaishnav culture of India, has been destroyed by technology being improperly used. That's how the eyes can make us impure. And if, of course, premanjana chriti bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva rida yeshu vilokiyanti yam shama sundaram achincha guna svarupam govindam adi purushang tamaham bhajami. We become pure by beholding the beautiful form of Shama Sundar and taking that form into our hearts. And if we see the Vaishnav, darshani pavitra koro e tomara gun. Narottam Das Thakur says, if you simply see the Vaishnav, you'll become pure, you see? So that's how we become pure. Let's talk about the nose. So if we smell, you know, if you walk down the high street and then you walk past a bakery, you smell the baking bread, you become tempted to go into the shop and take the bread, right? So we become attached through the smell. And we have perfumes. Perfumes can make us attached, you see? In the ear, beautiful music, we become attached to beautiful music. How do we counteract that? We listen to beautiful music as bhajans, you know, Hare Krishna bhajans. But be careful we don't become attached to the music. We should also remember that the ultimate attachment is to the holy name. So it said when Bhaktisananda Saraswati was leaving the body, one of his disciples, who was a sweet singer, started to sing, and he stopped this devotee. It's actually, this devotee was Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. He wasn't a sannyas at the time, but he's a beautiful singer. And Bhaktisananda Saraswati stopped him, and he asked Bhakti Rakshat Sridhar Swami to sing, whose voice was not as good. But that's a lesson to us all. It wasn't about melody. It's about he wanted to hear from that particular devotee. So we should be very careful about criticizing kirtan if it's not done melodiously, because we have to consider the purity of the person, you see. And Prabhupada once said, you know, he didn't like, he said many things. I'll give an example of an apparent contradiction, but it's not. Prabhupada, in one instruction, said, when you go on the street, you take cartels, madanga, and harmonium, he said. But then he said to, I think it was Revati Nandana Prabhu, he said, melodious instruments are not good for kirtan, because the tendency is our mind will follow the melody and not the holy name, you see. Now, Prabhupada himself, of course, as we have many recordings of the beautiful harmonium Prabhupada's playing, and he's singing bhajans. So we have to understand things in context, that there are different ways of looking at things. But through the sound, I mentioned through the ear, we have music. We have like the talk. I mentioned, I keep going back to the talk between male and female. If you hear, you know, you hear the beautiful voice of a woman, you know, that can cause bondage to this material world, you see. And I think we've covered all the senses, have we? We've covered all of them, yeah. So we should try and think of it this way. Think of our bodies as a lump of ignorance. Think of the senses as a network of paths leading to death. And we should be very careful of how to engage all those senses in Krishna consciousness in order that we can advance, you see. So it said, Radha Bhava Jyoti Suvalitam Naomi Krishna Swarupam. I offer my obeisances to Lord Sri Chaitanya, who is none other than Krishna. Radha Bhava Jyoti Suvalitam. That means the Bhava. Bhava means the mood. And duty means the complexion. So Lord Chaitanya is none other than Radha Krishna combined. So as we're talking about Buddhism, we can say a little bit about Buddhism. So the fault that we have with Buddhism, it is atheistic. Just a few days ago, I went to the Buddhist temple in Amaravati, which is near Hemel Hempstead. I sometimes go there and chant. I remember there was one devotee, Raghunath Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple, I believe, and he used to go there as well. I met him there once. And it's a nice, peaceful place. They don't say anything to anyone, so you can go around, chant your japa there. It's not required, of course. But I like to go there because I find it very peaceful. It's a beautiful building. They've got a lovely wooden truss, and it's very peaceful. There's some gardens as well. And before the COVID epidemic, I went there for several classes just to see what they say. And I'm a little like, I'm not the most subtle. I have this big Hare Krishna sweatshirt. So I went there with my Hare Krishna sweatshirt, which had Hare Krishna on the front and it had the Maha Mantra on the back. And I sat in their classes. There was three of them. I think they were every Sunday. And there was a German lady, a Buddhist, and she was giving classes, and I heard it all, and there was nothing she said that offended me or anything. I mean, I'm not going to take offense anyway, but until the third lecture, and then she said something that I didn't like. It's okay, I don't mind, but she said, you can meditate on God if you like, but it won't help you. It won't help you get liberation, because you have to do it yourself. That's what she said. So that's a different philosophy. Our philosophy is it's about mercy. Without the mercy of the Vaishnavas, without the mercy of Krishna, we cannot make any advancement. And we sing this every morning. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadam nagati kutopihi. So that's what meaning is that by the mercy of the spiritual master, one can make spiritual advancement. And without the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement, you see. So that's when I thought to myself, yes, I've heard enough. I won't go for future classes. Interesting, one of the classes was recorded, and I was sitting near the front, and then one of the Buddhists said to me, could you possibly sit at the back? And I was thinking, I know why, because it's on video, and you have someone sitting there with the Hare Krishna mantra on the video. And I thought, I know you don't want that. But they're very polite, and I spoke to the teacher afterwards. She was very friendly. And all these other, they're mainly Asians, they came up to me after the class and said, oh, I go to the Hare Krishna temple too. So I was thinking, okay, it's all fun and games. So Mahaprabhu, he is very clear on the philosophy. Jivera Swarupahoy Krishnera Nichidas Krishnera Tatasya Shakti Beda Beda Prakash Suryang Shakirani Yaichi Agni Jwala Chai Swava Bika Krishna Tina Prakara Shakti Hoy. That the Jiva is Jivera Swarup, the real nature of the Jiva is Krishnera Nichidas. What does that mean? Yes, Das means servant, right? I mentioned Goswami and Godas, okay? So Godas, one time, the devotees, they're kind of, they like to play games. There was one businessman who thought, I can make a lot of money if I record the devotees singing and I'll make it a big hit, make it very popular. And he tried to arrange all the devotees to be, this was when Prabhupada was on the planet, all the devotees were nicely dressed in their saris and dhotis, and he was going to video them and he was going to try and market this. The devotees, they kind of went along with it, but they could see he had other motives, he was into the money, and I don't remember exactly what happened in the end, but they gave him a name. And he was very happy that he'd been given a name by the Hare Krishnas. And the name was, I think it was Godas Mudha, I think his name was. And he didn't know what it meant, and he was very honored that he'd been given a name by the Hare Krishnas, you see. So Mudha means foolish, Godas means servant of the senses, you see. So, Jivera Surabhahoy Krishnera Nichidas, Krishnera Tatashta Shakti Beda Beda Prakash. And the living entity is Beda Beda Prakash. Now, Prakash means a manifestation, which is Beda, different, and Abeda, non-different. So we're simultaneously different and non-different from Krishna. That's what this is saying. Suryang Shakirani Jaichi Agni Jwala Chai. And the analogy is given like, just as the sun has rays, or just as fire has sparks, in the same way we're like the spark or the ray that's coming from Krishna, who in this analogy is like the sun or like the fire. So we see when as a child I used to sit in front of the bonfire and become hypnotized. It's kind of very hypnotic when you're out in the open, you have a bonfire and it's going and you see little sparks coming off, fiery sparks. They're very bright as they come off and then they fade. So in the same way, if we're connected to Krishna, we have the blazing fire of devotional service in our hearts. And if we disconnect ourselves, we become covered, we become lifeless, we become dull, we lose our passion. I mean, spiritual passion. We become inert, we become covered, we become the lump of ignorance, and the sense is the network of paths that lead us to death, that lead us to repeated birth and death, you see. So that is the philosophy, Vaishnava philosophy. We're eternal servants of Krishna. Asato vijade bhava nabhavo vijate sadaha. Of the eternal, there is no cessation, and of the non-eternal, there is no duration. Life can be, we can consider everything to be either asat, which means temporary, or sat, permanent, you see. So if we all sincerely, we try our best, you know, we try our best to control our senses. We have to make a sincere effort. We try to make our speech pure. We try to eat pure food. We engage all our senses. I mentioned Ambarish Maharaj. He engaged all his senses in the service of Krishna. If we try and do that, then ultimately we'll be successful in our Krishna consciousness. And if we try and do two things at once, then we'll be torn and we'll have a fight and we'll never get beyond the initial stages of devotional service. What stage should we be aiming for? What's within our reach? Nishtha. Nishtha is within our reach, to become fixed. Personally speaking, I think there are many devotees in this movement are very fixed. And that's a great example. And when we become fixed, then we get taste. What is the word for taste? ruchi. So it's like climbing a hill. When you climb a hill, it's very hard at first. But what happens when we get ruchi? It becomes easy. It becomes natural. I mentioned what Rupa Goswami said. Cheta prangana sangini vichayati sarvindriyanam kritim. All the senses become controlled. Then it becomes easy. Until that happens, there's a war going on. Our mind is dragging us this way and that way. So savai mana Krishna padar vindayo. Think of the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the proper way to fix the mind. Think of the lotus feet of Krishna, and then all sense gratification, the desire for it will disappear. And we'll be very in bliss, and ultimately we'll attain samadhi. Samadhi means actual consciousness of Krishna, full absorption, the pinnacle of the yoga ladder. Ashtanga yoga, 8 steps, samadhi is the top. So samadhi is our ultimate goal, become so fixed on Krishna that we think of nothing else. Everything we see reminds us of Krishna. That is pure Krishna consciousness. But even if we get to the platform of ruchi, then only a foolish person would fall down after attaining ruchi. But unfortunately it happens. It can happen through Vaishnava Parad, for example. So while we're struggling to attain ruchi, we should remember that struggle. We should remember that pain, because when we do attain ruchi, we will have that memory of how hard it is to struggle in this material world, and we'll be very, very careful to protect our bhakti and not fall down again, because then we have to go through that whole process of struggle over and over again. If we commit offence, our devotional creeper is uprooted, you see. So it's a very serious game, but it's not a game. It's a very serious business. In some ways it's a game. Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, it is easy. You know, just chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, dance, so easy. When Mahaprabhu was in Varanasi, there were kind of snobby sannyasis who were thinking that studying the Vedanta Sutra is higher than chanting Hare Krishna. So they criticized this wonderful sannyasi. They were simultaneously attracted to him, but at the same time they criticized him. You know, why are you engaged in this sentimental activity? Because in this culture, who is the top? The philosophers, you know, the Advaitas, the Vedavadis, the Mayavadis, they were considered the topmost. And they had this culture of Vedanta Sutra study. And Mahaprabhu's chanting Hare Krishna. They're like, that's musicians. Musicians are like Shudra class. You know, why are you engaged in mere music? You should study the Vedanta Sutra. What did they say? Murka tumi tumara nahika vidanta adhikar. You know, I'm a fool. You know, my spiritual master said, I'm a fool. Therefore, I should not study Vedanta Sutra. Krishna mantra japa sada, e mantra sar. We should chant the Hare Krishna mantra. It's the essence of all mantras, you see. So we all chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And I've given this example before, but it's very important, so I'll say it again. There was once an important gentleman. He came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and said, I'm very impressed with the eloquence of your disciples. I wish to learn to speak like them. Please direct me to one of them. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati directed him to one of his disciples, Ram Das, who was the gardener. Ram Das was not an intellectual. He was simply growing fruit, vegetables for the deities, and he was chanting Hare Krishna, and he was not second initiated. So this gentleman, when he went to speak to Ram Das, he was confused, because this Ram Das wasn't quite what he thought. You know, I thought he'd be a great philosopher, eloquent speaker. He went back to Siddhanta Saraswati and said, you know, there's some misunderstanding here. Back to Siddhanta Saraswati said, go back and speak to him and ask him to reveal his heart. So he went back, and this gardener said, I don't know, I'm not intellectual. I simply grow food, offer to the deities, and by the Lord's mercy, the holy name just dances on my tongue, you see. So That was a lesson from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, that we shouldn't be snobbish. We shouldn't be thinking that, oh, so-and-so is less intelligent. It said, Vaishnave jati buddhi naraki saha. Yasya naraki saha. If one judges a Vaishnava according to jati, which means according to one's birth, you know, that is Vaishnav, that is naraki, one is a resident of hell. So we have to be careful. And in our society, we have to be especially careful because we have people from different backgrounds. We have devotees who are culturally familiar. That's a phrase that Akhandari Prabhu uses. He's one of our formal temple presidents. He made the point, we sometimes discuss why it is that there are not so many Westerners in the Hare Krishna movement. And there's a tendency to talk in terms of demographics, as in Western versus Asian. But he changed it and he said it's more correct to talk about culturally familiar and culturally unfamiliar. And that's more accurate because there are many Indian-bodied devotees who are very, very dedicated to the Harinam Sankirtan. And they maybe don't consider themselves as a Hindu as such. They consider themselves, oh, I'm a Vaishnav. And then there are white-bodied devotees who maybe are more into maybe the Hindu aspect of Hare Krishna rather than, say, the book distribution aspect. So there's different moods. But it's all about, are we culturally familiar or culturally unfamiliar? You know, do we know what Srila Prabhupada came to give and do we value it? You see? So one of my dear friends is here, it's Pramana Prabhu, and he's a very good example because he's been distributing Prabhupada's books for years, and I'm very inspired by that. So this is someone who knows what was very, very dear to Prabhupada's heart. And if we engage in the service of distributing books, and because that was a service that was very dear to Srila Prabhupada, then we can expect and we can hope to have wonderful realizations to make spiritual advancement. And we should dedicate our lives to such activities, and it's not very easy. And at the same time, we should respect everyone, whatever that level of their spirituality is. We don't know how advanced someone is. We can't judge advancement based on service, you know. Some people are distributing Prabhupada's books and they may not be so advanced. There'd be other devotees may be very advanced and they're doing other services like deity worship, management, or like, you know, prasad distribution. Some devotees, they're doing online preaching, wonderful results. Some of the online preaching is going through the roof. There are devotees who have online groups with hundreds of people joining, you know, hundreds of people. So the spread of Krishna consciousness is going very, very fast through internet, through social media. Recently I heard about, we have an online church. Imagine that, Hare Krishna's online church. Sounds great, right? We can all get together and have, instead of having a physical church, we can have an online church. We can all associate through internet. That's how social media is helping spread the spread of the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's all about simultaneously doing two things. We must distinguish higher from lower when it comes to devotional practice. You know, we may chant insincerely, we may be inattentive. Others may chant with great focus. Some devotees chant with great focus. We should discriminate and we should understand, yes, I want to be like that devotee. That devotee is chanting very sincerely with great focus. I want to be like that devotee. Or I want to be able to go on the street and distribute Prabhupada's books. It's a difficult thing to do, but I want that. And we should aspire for things that we find inspiring. Or we may think, this devotee is doing some wonderful management. They're tolerating so much trouble from other people, and they're still doing it with great dignity. And we should respect and we should aspire in whatever capacity to serve Krishna. But we should distinguish and see which devotees inspire me the most. Have an eye and see who's inspiring me. I want to be like them and try and get the blessings of such a devotee. And then we can all make spiritual advancement. Because ultimately, it's about unity. That we're all one big family and we're trying our best to progressively spread Krishna consciousness. And at the same time, we must distinguish amongst ourselves from those who are more advanced and we should aspire to be like them. Because the proper way to deal with devotees is to serve those that are more advanced, to make friends with equals, and to give mercy to juniors, you see. If we follow this principle, then our society will run very, very smoothly. So it's now 9:15 and prasad is probably served soon. So I'll I thank you all for your time. Please excuse any deficiencies in my class. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now I have some time for comments and questions. Coco's here. She always has some questions for us. Thank you. Do we have a microphone? We also have Antaranga Prabhu, but we'll, I ask Coco, so...
Hare Bol Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
My question is, this is on behalf of Vaishnavis.
Okay.
Because we hear so much about, you know, women being a disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
well, by the way, hopefully my speaking is not too disturbing for everyone.
It's easy for people to get disturbed. This is Kali Yuga.
So what is a Vaishnavi to do then? So we're not the body ultimately.
Yes.
And you know, there's that a desire also within a Vaishnavi to become just as pure, right?
Yes.
Well, could you explain just the relationship between the external and the internal consciousness of the receiver, of the listener, or of the person, you know, who are listening? For example, let's use the example of voice. Could you extract, say, the nectar from the poison, and sort of,
you know, like the
swan, for example.
Yes.
And what about, like, for example, it's hard for me not to be speaking with the men in this movement.
Yes.
Like, mainly it's run by everybody who happens to be a man. So
yes.
what are we supposed to do? Like,
okay.
Do you have some...
Thank you. That's an interesting question. And it probably comes up a lot expressed in different ways. I mean, ultimately, we understand the principles. We must extract the principles from the scriptures. Now, the scriptures are generally written from a male perspective. They say, you know, it is bondage to the woman is the greatest cause. But what we understand, the broad principle is, for women, it is bondage to the man. That's the ultimate principle. And, of course, we're living in woke culture, so I'm not going to assume that everyone is heterosexual. There's all the bondage. The point is, the bondage, the sexual attraction, whoever it's for, is the greatest form of bondage. Now, you mentioned a very important point. See, Prabhupada, he had his female disciples give classes. It wasn't like, I mean, there was a period in the movement. In one temple, I heard that some of the men were so fanatical that when they gave class, they faced the wall so they wouldn't see any women. These things happen. Prabhupada, he was very practical. When the movement started, it was like men and women were circumambulating Tulsi together. There was like, so there's two principles here. There's the principle of let us all just get on together. We're not these bodies, and the interaction between men and women isn't such a big deal because we're just there to spread Krishna consciousness. And as long as we're doing that sincerely, then Krishna will protect us. Then there's the other system of segregation is required. I mean, I remember one time Prabhupada said, talking about one temple, and he said, yes, we should have two entrances. You know, one for the men and one for the women. Like that. And then we have these dilemmas, you know. I remember one devotee saying, we find it's very difficult in our Sunday program to attract people because we have this segregation between men and women, and people are coming and they just think, well, we're just part of a family, we want to sit together, you know. So there's these dilemmas that happen. But you mentioned that we can extract the nectar from the poison, so to speak. So that's a very nice analogy. So if for example, I hear a woman's voice and I see a woman, then that could be like worse than drinking poison if I am serious about crossing over the ocean of material existence. That's the verse I quoted. Prabodhananda Saraswati, I think it's. Anyway, but at the same time, we can hear the Vaishnavi, and the spiritual potency from our mouth will tame the senses, you see. So it is a mistake to think I cannot hear from a Vaishnavi, because that is to assume that the spiritual potency of the Vaishnavi is insufficient to counteract the attraction. And if it were the case, then by symmetry, the women shouldn't listen to men speaking either. And we have a society where we'd have only a class for men and a class for women. And it is not the way Prabhupada taught it. So the answer is yes, that if we're sincere, then we get spiritual benefit from hearing from members of the opposite sex. Does that kind of answer you? Or you have more?
Yeah, thanks for clarifying.
Thank you. Okay. Well, and an antaranga afterwards. Thank you, sir.
Can you elaborate, like what you said, like not doing two things at a time? Like, so what does that mean?
Say again? Not doing two things at a time. What was the context? Yeah. That's fine, of course. I mean, when I work, I play either bhajans or Prabhupada playing. Yeah, it's if you're fortunate enough that your workplace allows it, if you're self-employed or if you. Yeah. No, that's very nice. I mean, I used to be a security guard, and part of the reason I did it was I could just walk around with. Listen to Prabhupada lectures, and it was very unchallenging work intellectually. I wasn't doing anything. I just had to be there, be a presence, and I was listening to lectures. Or I'd sit in a booth, and I would read Chaitanya Charitamrita, well, and then the site was closed, and then I'd go for I'd lock up the whole site, and I'd go to my room, and then I'd do some more reading, and there was no one would ever disturb me. So I did a lot of study of Bhagavatam because I had a job that was on a lone site. I was by myself, and that's just what I did. So, yeah, you can multitask. We have to engage everything in Krishna service, including our work. Okay, Antaranga Prabhu, if we could. And then this gentleman here afterwards.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class.
Krishna.
I have one question, and you can see throughout the history there was like a theological evolution, right? There was Christianity, there was presentation of Buddhism, Shankaracharya, Lord Chaitanya, and kind of a Srila Prabhupada as an acharya of presentation for the modern day and age.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, can this great scale world evolution of consciousness, theological evolution, can be also sort of a presentable to the individual? And what does it mean for a preacher? Like, let's say if someone is on a Buddhistic or platform of practicing Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
are we obliged to always fully present, okay, this is the path of bhakti? Or do we need to understand that their stage, they're not ready for this sort of a presentation of philosophy? But should we look and like, okay, let's present some, not Shankaracharya concepts like in terms of Mayavad, but something more palatable for take them basically bridge preaching. Should we bridge the gap based on the consciousness of the person and the religion he's practicing, but ultimately bringing fully to the Krishna consciousness, but with those semi-steps? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I follow what you're saying. So there's a lovely question, Antaranga Prabhu, and I had a conversation with Antaranga Prabhu, and he's very skilled at book distribution, and he can do it in a very direct way, and his arguments are very compelling, and he seems to get good results from that. But often, you know, we're more, you know, soft, we're more like diplomatic. We sometimes it's said better to make friends than to be right. I used to go to Poland. And Poland's a very, very Catholic country, and we do Hare Krishna festivals, and then we'd have our questions and answers. So I asked the manager, I said to her, should we speak blunt truth at the risk of offending people, or should we kind of tone it down? And I mean, one time, I actually got quite a good result from this. I was challenged by a Catholic there, and she goes, "Your cult, your Hare Krishna cult, I heard you drink the water that has washed the feet of your leaders. Is this true?" And I said, "Yes, and Christians drink the blood of Christ. So what's the difference? You know, you drink the blood of Christ, we drink the water that's washed the feet of the Vaishnavas." And she said, no answer to it. No, no. This is like Christianity, it's some blood-drinking cult, right? It's like, anyway. So go back to your question. What does the Bhagavad Gita say? Na buddhi beda janayed yoshitam karma sanginam. One should not disturb the intelligence of those who are attached to fruit of things, karma sanginam. We should instead gradually engage them in Krishna consciousness. You see? So our business is to gradually engage people in Krishna consciousness. You've said something about, well, should we maybe preach to a Buddhist about Mayavad to bring him closer to the Vedas? That can be done if you think that is going to somehow help them in the long run. But at the same time, to do that in and of itself wouldn't be, you're not really giving them bhakti. So you could, at best, you could maybe think to yourself, for me, the farthest I could take that is to say to myself, okay, this person is, I'm wearing Tulsi or I'm a Vaishnav, this person's seeing me, and although I'm not a very advanced Vaishnav, that person at least is having some contact with a devotee, therefore there's some bhakti transmission hopefully there. And if I tell the person and engage them in a conversation, explaining them about Shankaracharya in order that they move away from Buddhism into the Vedas, you know, maybe you might think that might helpful in the long run, because by taking them to the Vedas, they'll ultimately come to Krishna. But I would say that I don't really think of any examples of Prabhupada ever doing that. So for that reason, I'm hesitant to do that. I don't think it would be the way I would approach it. But yeah, the basic principle is, well, we do it all the time, you know, someone maybe eats meat and they're not interested in Hare Krishna, but we say to them, well, at least be a vegetarian, at least, you know, be compassionate, and that works. So I think it's just, it's about time, place and circumstance, and sometimes we go for a direct approach and sometimes we kind of take people gradually along a path. So I'm not really giving you a good answer there, but that's what I think. But if you have any additional comments, you know, welcome. What's your reflection on this tricky, difficult to answer this one?
There's one very nice quotation or instruction Prabhupada gave to Indra Dumna Maharaj, and okay, it recently became my mantra. He said, have faith in the holy name and preach boldly.
Mm.
So this is something which I try to relate to. Have faith in the holy names. So give them mantra as soon as possible and preach boldly. Say it as it is.
Wonderful.
And so that's my mantra recently.
You should preach boldly, yes. I love that.
Hare Krishna.
I'll say one extra thing about Vaishnav. Prabhupada says, you know, Vaishnav were like lawyers, you know. So lawyers, they may fight very forcefully in the law court, but when they step out the law court, they're friends, okay? So it's the same in Vaishnav dealings. We may have differences of opinion, and we may present our philosophy, our angle of vision, and we may be very robust, but we're always friends, okay? So that we have to be careful here, because we can get into arguments and take it personally, but we should always remember we're always friends, and that's how we compartmentalize. So if we have differences of opinion, we must be able to present our angle of vision boldly, sincerely, without holding back, and trust that the other person will take it the proper way, and we always remain friends. Someone else had a comment or question? Oh, yes, Prabhu. I'm sorry. We have so many questions. I have three more to hear. Well, we're going to finish just after, and we only have a few minutes left, so if we could just take a couple more questions. Sorry for overrunning. But it says prasadam at 9 o'clock. Sunday class finishes at 9, it says
hello,
here. So.
Hello.
Hare Krishna.
I want to give some quotations. When Bhaktivedanta Saraswati was approached by freedom fighter for India, Subhash Chandra Bose.
Yes.
And he approached him and asked him, give me all these monks, and it will help us to free the India from British Empire.
Mm.
And Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Maharaji told him that if we give you your army, which is 26,000 people, I can free the whole world.
Mm. Hare Krishna, Jai.
Hare Krishna.
I've heard another story, maybe it's an additional part. He said, look at these monks, they're so skinny, you know, they won't be able to fight. Just leave them alone. Anyway. Hare Krishna. There was a couple more, Prabhuji. Subhash Chandra Bose.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
My question is on sometimes we have invitations in like Lord Shiva is considered as one of the topmost Vaishnava, and we also go to sometimes invite from Jain temples where Lord Rishabhnath is considered as one of the incarnation of the Lord itself. So how do we consider when we go there for prasad and all?
With the Jains?
Jain temples, and because it's not directly offered to...
Yes.
Yeah, and then Lord Shiva himself is topmost Vaishnava. So there also the, we go for the function and at the temple. So how do we consider those prasad?
It is a problem. But I'll tell you a story. I mean, there's one instance. Once again, it was Revatinandana Prabhu. And I forget where it was. It may have been even the Sikh temple. Anyway, devotees went to another institution and it wasn't Vaishnava, and they ate. And he commented to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, this isn't, it's not been offered." And Prabhupada said, "It is all prasadam." And he said, "But don't tell that to the devotees, you know, because they will then use it to gratify their senses." So what my understanding of that is, like, on the Uttama Adhikari platform, everything's Krishna's energy, and you can actually see it as prasadam. But before you get to that platform, it's very important that you go through the whole process of offering it to Krishna and such not. It's what do you do if you're cultivating someone and the guest offers you food and it's not offered to Krishna? What do you do? What would you do? Does anyone have an answer? What would you do? Would you decline it? Yeah. What if it's already been, some people have already eaten it? What would you do? Who would take, put your hand up if you would eat it, not to displease the guest? I don't know the answer, by the way. I'm just, honour it. Who says, who thinks they wouldn't honour it? They would just be like, humbly say, "I'm really sorry, but I can only eat if it's done this way." Okay, we have different...
You can offer it like in our mind to the Krishna.
Yeah. One time, Prabhupada was taken in some...
You cannot have, like, onion, garlic or anything. You can tell
okay. Okay. So there is a story. Prabhupada was taken, and his disciples were eating at someone's house. And then one of the Prabhupada disciples said, "Prabhupada, there's onions in the prasadam." And Prabhupada said, "There's no onions." And he said, "Prabhupada, there's onions in the prasadam." And he just quiet, you know, just eat. So the point was they were honored. It was like we're guests and there was some exchange of love, so we're gonna turn a blind eye to the onions, okay? That was that pastime. Anyway, we've run up of time, and so okay, one more. Yeah. Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Litai Gaura Pramanandi. Haribol.